The questioner writes, I have read so much about the wonders of acupuncture, no one seems to be able to explain exactly why it 48. Works. Could the 12 major areas of insertion of the needle correspond to 12 psychic centers of the body, thus explaining the mystery and perhaps providing a link between the third and fourth dimension of existence? Yes, there is so much mystery about acupuncture. Unfortunately, the press have overdramatized things. Acupuncture is far more effective in the Far East than it is in the Western world. Now, the reason for that is not difficult to seek. I repeatedly state the truth that humans are just puppets of the over-self. All right, when was the last time you went to a puppet show? Have you ever had a puppet in your hands? Even the simplest of puppets have a string which controls the head, other strings control the arms and legs, so even the simplest of puppets have 5 controlling strings. How many more strings then, can a human, which is quite a complicated sort of puppet after all, have? Acupuncture works by intercepting a nerve stream, by shorting out a nerve stream which has some defect. For example, you might have a car and you find that you cannot use it because every time you switch on the ignition and associated circuits the fuse blows, and you cannot exactly find out what is wrong with the car. So, if you do not have all the time in the world to spare, you locate the area in which the trouble occurs. It might be, purely for example, the horn which has a defect, so if you cut out the horn for the time being you can drive your car and go to a garage where the car can be repaired. The acupuncture process temporarily shorts out a defective part of the nervous system and causes a stimulation to go in a reverse direction which causes very considerable alleviation of the condition giving distress. We have our puppet, the puppet strings go to the hand of the operator, but the hand of the operator is controlled by the brain of the operator, and so if the puppet does not manage too well it may be that the hand of the operator cannot manage to carry out the commands of the brain. Now, let us replace that, let us say the puppet is a human, the hand is the brain of the human, and then we can see that if the brain cannot give the right messages to any limb or portion of the body then a dysfunction occurs, and if it is in an ordinary puppet then possibly 49. A string could be lengthened or shortened to carry out a temporary repair. We do the same type of thing, in principle at least, with acupuncture. But why does it work better with the Easterner? Well, the Easterner has a different set of vibrations from the Westerner. The Easterner is more concerned about the things of the spirit, more concerned about the one life after death, more concerned about moral values, ethics, and all that. So the Easterner is more able to accept the reality that sticking a needle or two into one's shuddering anatomy can cause a dramatic decrease in the physical symptoms. The Western world is more concerned about the things of this life, more concerned about getting power over others, more concerned about making money in a hurry and not parting with it except for one's own creature comforts. The Western world is not able to believe anything unless they can get hold of it and tear it to pieces, and when they have utterly destroyed it say, well, fancy that. It did work after all. Too bad it was destroyed in proving it was right. I believe even the Christian Bible has something to the effect that unless one be as a little child one cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven. All right. Unless one can have a childlike simplicity and a true faith that there are things which humans on earth cannot explain, then one will not be benefited by acupuncture. Acupuncture is not a faith-healing thing at all, there is no faith in it because acupuncture really does cure. But first you have to have the metabolism of a sensitive person who can accept the reality that a cure is going to be effected. Now, that is different from faith-healing. Some people say, well, you prove that to me and I still won't believe it. Like the old woman who went to the zoo and saw a giraffe and exclaimed, gee, there ain't no such animal, so, no matter how good the acupuncturist, no matter how brilliant his needles, unless the person who is to be treated has the necessary spiritual perception a cure will not occur, and the press hearing of such a case will eagerly rush into print and thoroughly discourage and lower the perception point of others who could, without press intervention, have been cured. 50 Now, here is a nice little question which also, undoubtedly, is in the minds of many people. The question is, does one ever have to return to, say, the fourth or third, or even the second or first dimensions after having existed somewhere in the fifth through the ninth dimensions for reasons of having led a wantonly evil life in one of these higher planes? The answer to that is a very definite no. If a person is a naughty boy in the third dimension, he comes back to the third dimension, he does not go to the second. I believe you get the same sort of system in schools. If a student doesn't do his work very well while he is in grade 3, then at the end of term he goes on vacation and has an unpleasant interview with his parents. At the end of the vacation he goes back to school in grade 3. He doesn't get shoved down to grade 1. In the same way, a person struggling along through the school of evolution does not come back to a lower grade but only to the same grade. So if you misbehave or do not learn your lessons properly, then you will be coming back to this poor sorry old earth again, where conditions are going to be a bit worse for quite a long time. People come down to lower dimensions for special purposes, they are volunteers. Do you remember the old army story of volunteers? The sergeant says, "Hey you, I want 10 volunteers, you, you, and you." Well, perhaps people in much higher dimensions take a look at the earth and shudder at what they see. Then they go back and come to the conclusion that someone, some specialist, will have to return to the earth as a volunteer and find out what is wrong, and then help the people of the earth get on the right path. There are a few snags attached to that, because one of the greatest laws is that you cannot use for your own gain knowledge which you have acquired in a different dimension. You have to live as a denizen of the third dimension, or whatever it is, and make do with the facilities inherent to the third dimension. Another usual reaction is that the volunteer is different, so he or she is persecuted and, all too frequently, disliked because the person is, in effect, a foreign body, a splinter in the body of the earth. You, for instance, if you get a splinter stuck in any 51 part of your anatomy, well, you make quite a commotion until the splinter is dug out. The volunteers have also the painful experience of finding that they are not popular. It doesn't matter who they are. Even Christ was persecuted. Even Gautama was persecuted. Even Moses had more than he could deal with. And during their lifetime they were not popular, they were regarded as nosy parkers, as do-gooders, etc. etc. Only after such a volunteer has been gone from the earth plane for many years does it dawn on the earth people that, oh well, the person must have been some good after all, and then they write a Bible or two about him. But that doesn't help the volunteer very much, does it? At the present stage, the poor wretched volunteers have a further hazard to the success of their work. The pressmen are always looking out for anyone who is different. And if a person is different, he doesn't play ball with the press, and so he gets persecuted and he is called a fake, and that further inhibits the success of what he is trying to do. He may, for instance, be doing very well indeed at his voluntary task, but then some crummy pressman cooks up an entirely imaginary story together with documentary proofs, and that really does cause a very considerable obstacle to a good task. There is another question which fits in well here. The question is, having achieved the ninth dimension, is one crystallized to become one forever with the Creator irrevocably and forever and ever? Well, no, one is never crystallized, there is always something higher to reach for. Do you know the old statement, there is always room at the top of a ladder? I have often referred to the ninth dimension. Okay, let me give you a new target. The 900th dimension. Now, there is no point at all in trying to explain to you what the 900th dimension is, but there is a 900th dimension, and there are some higher. But if you cannot even understand the fourth or the fifth dimension, how can you even begin to understand the 900th? One rises and rises and rises. Of course, if one fights every inch of the way, one is lower to rise. But people always have their opportunities, and I state definitely, definitely that no. 52. One is ever destroyed, not even the press people. Hey, you think I am going on about the press people? I have reason to, you know. I have had a lot of trouble with the press people in England and in Germany, in France and, as you will read later, in French Canada too. But no, I am not bitter against the press, I am not bitter against anyone. But it is stupid to sit down like Ferdinand the Bull and just smell the flowers, while some ill-disposed people are trying to cut off one's tail for oxtail soup. Oh no. Do not think that I am bitter, because I am not. Do not think that I am attacking the press unfairly. I am not. I am telling the truth, they are the ones who cook up the tales. But back to our dimensions, old Hitler, or Stalin, or a few others of that type, well, they will not be bumped back to the first dimension, you know. They won't even get bumped back to the second dimension. They will come back to the third. And let me whisper something. Is your ear ready for a nice juicy whisper? Hear it, is then. It is a fact that the real villain and tyrant of this life comes back to a new life as a ranting preacher. For instance, a man who has been a real sex pervert in one life may come ranting and preaching against sex in any shape or form, without having any regard as to how the race is to be continued. In the same way, a fellow who was the chief torturer of a very fierce country will come back as a very, very sympathetic doctor, maybe. Things have to be equalized, you see. It is a case of lose one, gain one. You have to balance things out. So if you are a real thug in one life, you come back as an imitation saint in the next, because when you go to the Hall of Memories you see what a mess you made of things, so you return full of bitter remorse thinking what a scoundrel you were, and you go overboard rather, you overdo things, you become extreme, and so you get a real hearty old sinner coming back as one of these galloping priests who roar around the world teaching people to do nothing except squat on their haunches and bellow out a hymn or two. So, if you get any really good preacher in the next few years, well, it might just be old Hitler come back. Now, how did I get into a bunch of questions like this? What am I having to work out by having myself saddled with? 53. Such queries? Look at this one, is all creation composed of the vibrations of the musical octave with most of these octaves higher, or perhaps even lower, than human ears can detect? Everything is vibration, every single thing, even so-called dead matter vibrates, otherwise it could not exist. You get a lump of rock and you can't hear the noise it makes, but some creatures somewhere could. And they perhaps call the rock the singing stones or something, which would be a change from the rolling stones, wouldn't it? But all vibration is life, all life is vibration, and humans can perceive only the very minutest spectrum of vibrations. There are some places where rocks sing, and there are some places where rocks are, in fact, creatures. They may take 100 years or so to make any movement which would be perceptible to humans. But these creatures, having a few millions of years of life according to Earth standards, are quite satisfied with their rate of movement. In any case, they all go at the same rate, so they don't know what slope oaks they are. This next question, logically, I suppose, should have been placed 2 questions higher. The question is the Earth itself designed to evolve to a higher plane? Is the Moon on a plane below that of the Earth? And is this too destined to evolve to a higher plane and be replaced by another creation on the original level of the Moon's lower plane? Now my head is in a whirl with all that. How many questions is that in a bunch? I'd better stop for a moment until my head stops whirling. Seriously though, the Earth is like a classroom. You wouldn't say that a classroom evolved. You wouldn't say the classroom of the grade 3 student suddenly evolves and becomes a grade 4 classroom or a grade 5 classroom. A classroom is a classroom and that's all there is to it. Of course, many different collections of students pass through the classroom just as many different collections of civilizations pass through the Earth, and every so often there are tremendous cataclysms upon the Earth which plow up the surface of the planet so that all trace of life is lost and buried a few miles below the surface. That is why there is no trace of Mu or 54 Lemuria or Atlantis. That is why there are no traces of civilizations eons before Atlantis itself. Think of the farmer. He goes along with some horrible-looking implement and all the surface of the field is churned up and turned over and plowed deep so that there is a new surface ready for the fresh seeding. That is how the earth is, that is how the gardeners of the earth go on. When a race gets too bad, along comes something to turn over the surface of the earth and to bury all that which appertained to a previous decadent civilization, and then there is fresh earth upon which to plant fresh specimens. The moon, or the moons, as the case may be, are not in any way inferior to the so-called parent planet. The moon, in fact, may just be a large asteroid which has been caught by the gravitational field of that world which is about to become the predominant body, such as the Earth has the Moon as its satellite. And then you must also remember that people are used to life on Earth. They consider that all life must be that which is acceptable to them. It doesn't mean at all that life on the Moon, for example, must be identical to that upon the Earth. The people could, for instance, live inside the Moon. To reply to this question, then, one can only say, no. The Earth does not evolve to a higher plane. It is just a classroom for people who are evolving. A sudden commotion. The old man looked up from his work in some exasperation. Letters were bad enough to answer without unwelcome interruption, but the visitor came in sight. "Hi," he said exuberantly, then sobered up a bit. "Say, you never read the French language papers, do you?" "No," said the old man. "I never read them at all, never even glance at them." "Well, you should, you know," said the visitor. "They've been running quite a lot about you lately. Dunno what's bothering them, I'm sure, but they seem to regard you as a personal enemy. What's the matter? Wouldn't you give them an interview, or something?" "No," said the old man. "I do not propose to give interviews to the press because on every single occasion when I have given an interview my remarks have been grossly distorted in their reports. So it's better not to see any press man and then." 55. We know that any interview is entirely imaginary. The visitor plucked at the lobe of his ear. "Well, I don't know about that, because how are you going to tell people that you didn't give an interview after all? And even if you tell them, knowing how people are nowadays, they probably wouldn't believe it." "No," replied the old man, "this is one of the cases when you can't be right, whatever you do." "Tell you something," said the visitor, "I used to think you were a bit paranoid about the press, but some of the things I've seen lately and some of the things I've read lately lead me to believe that you're not such a nut after all. Seems everyone's had trouble with the press. Listen to this." He ruffled about in his pockets, turning out bales of paper and sorting through the tattered mass. He came to a sheet which seemed to satisfy his search, so carefully he unfolded it and read, "Now here's something for you. It's something that Thomas Jefferson said some years ago. He said, 'Even the least informed of the people have learned that nothing in a newspaper is to be believed now.' What do you think of that? Now here's one, a real gem. Winston Churchill once wrote, 'The essence of American journalism is vulgarity divested of truth. Their best papers write for a class of snotty housemaids and footmen, and even the nicest people have so much vitiated their taste as to appreciate this style.'" The old man smiled and said, "Oh, I can do better than that, or if not better, as well. You know General William Sherman, a big American general? Well, he once wrote, 'I would rather be governed by Jefferson Davis than be abused by a set of dirty newspaper scribblers who have the impudence of Satan. They come into camp, poke about among the lazy shirks, and pick up camp rumors and publish them as facts, and the avidity with which these rumors are swallowed by the public makes even some of our officers bow to them as spies, which, in truth, they are.'" But there was no point in going on such lines, so the old man said, "Well, I've got work to do. You'll have to make tracks elsewhere for the time. I must get on with this or people will think I am a very bad author, that I can't reply to letters." 56. "Beat it, will you?" With a sigh and a hunch of the shoulders the old man turned back to his work again. Now here is a question which should be of interest to many. It is, when I go to the Hall of Memories, if I decide I have learned what I set out to learn on this earth, do I move on to a plane of existence on a spirit world, or do I take the human form again but live on a different planet in a different universe? Well, if when you get to the Hall of Memories you decide that you have accomplished that which you set out to do, then you will not return to the earth. There would be no point in so doing because you will have passed. Think of school life again. Think if you go to a university or to a school, then there is no point in returning to cover a course for which you already have a diploma. If you succeeded, and if you are satisfied that you have succeeded, then you can remain in the astral plane for an indefinite time, or you can go on to another form of world where possibly the carbon molecule is not the basic brick of life, but maybe there is a silicon molecule or some other type of material. And there you could learn by kindness instead of by the hardship you endure on this earth. There is hardship on this earth because this is one of the hells. Cheer up, this hell will not endure forever. The same person asks, on the next plane of existence is the routine similar to that of the earth, suffering, pain, and hardship until we have learned more lessons so that we may progress to the next plane of existence? Actually, I have answered this quite a number of times, but let's go back to it again. Basically, no, as you evolve higher and higher you have less and less to endure. Take as an example conditions on this earth where the laborer gets the hard work, the bruises, and the bad language, etc., whereas the president or general manager of the company seems to make most of the profit, or at least that was so before the labor movement got underway and sort of reversed things, to the detriment of the world. But anyway, the point is that the higher you go, the more rapidly you will progress and the easier are the conditions. 57. Mind you, I am actually referring to the basic physical things. No one will disagree that the laborer, digging holes in the ground, has quite a lot of physical hard work. He gets messy conditions. He gets the rough side of the tongue from his foreman if he doesn't do his work properly. So he gets hard physical work. But, the president of a company or the general manager may sit in comfort in a padded chair, but he does have a lot of non-physical work to do. His is the responsibility for seeing that the less evolved, the laborers, are doing their work. So I do want to make it absolutely clear that the higher one goes, the greater are one's moral responsibilities. Look at it this way. The lowest laborers can go out and get drunk and have a fight and no one thinks anything about it. But if you got the higher people, a duke or a prince, if they went out on a pub crawl and got involved in a fight, well, that just wouldn't do. And anyway, it wouldn't happen because as they progress upwards, they get increased moral responsibility, increased moral and ethical discipline. They get greater respect in themselves and in their abilities. But the physical work is for the lower people, so that, when you are on this earth, if you are in the lower stages, you have the hard work. When you progress upwards to other dimensions, you do not have such hard and unpleasant conditions, but, of course, you have greater responsibilities for which your hard work will have drained you. Well, this person seems to be getting his money's worth. He's got a whole list of questions, but they are questions which seem to puzzle a lot of people. So here is his next question: what is the end going to be of all these planets that people live on, all these planes of existence? When the time comes that everybody has been through all the planes of existence and gained all the knowledge from these numerous lives, what do we do then? You cannot discuss this at present because of the limitations of the human three-dimensional comprehension. If you go into the astral world consciously, you will know precisely what happens. And in terms of Earth or even human comprehension, there is no end to it. It is like leftover meals you start off with. 58. A good meal one day, the next day you get the thing hotted up, the day after that they make it into rissoles or something, and eventually it returns to the Earth, makes fresh plants which feed fresh humans, and so it goes on. It is an endless cycle of existence. You've told us in your books, the questioner continues, that there are many universes. Does our universe overlap with any other or other just voids of darkness between? There are billions and trillions of universes. Now how can I make that clear to you? Well, let us imagine that you are on a seashore. At your feet there are all the grains of sand and these are in touch with each other, but you would not say that they overlapped, would you? Some are so small that they are dust, and some are great rocks, or even mountains, and, in fact, there are mountains beneath the sea just as there is sand beneath the sea. Think of all the grains of sand and all the rocks upon the earth, but all the grains of sand upon the earth, and all the rocks and all the stones upon the earth do not in any way equal the number of universes there are in the whole general system. And beyond this system there are others, on and on and on, ad infinitum, until we reach numbers far beyond human comprehension. Still with the same gentleman. I have to answer this gentleman because up to the present I have done so many questions for the ladies that I do really welcome a gentleman with some sensible questions. But, anyway, he goes on, in one of your books you describe how you went astral traveling with your guide. The Lama Minya Dondup and someone called Jigme to a red planet. When you were there you talked to some other people there who told you it was a dying planet. Were those other people in the astral form or in the human form, or did you materialize in front of them? You mustn't become confused between what is astral travel and what is physical travel. I didn't take a Greyhound bus to the red planet, that's for sure. But when one goes astral traveling one can still be completely visible to a clairvoyant, or completely audible to a telepath. So the red planet to which I went was populated, although extremely sparsely, and the population consisted of very highly evolved people who 59. Were clairvoyant and telepathic just as on this earth people hear things and they see things. So they could actually see us just as if we were solid lumps of flesh and bones. They could talk to us and we could talk to them. We could see everything on their planet and they could see us. Actually, it was astral travel, conscious astral travel under full control, but that made no difference at all to them and it made no difference at all to us. We were there. Now, here is something for you to think about. You read this a few times, then scratch your head and think about it some more. You may be out in the street and you may see in front of you a person walking about in a perfectly ordinary and natural manner but, are you sure he really is there? Are you sure he is not an astral traveler who is stimulating your sensory perceptions to an extent that you believe he is a solid figure, whereas actually he may be in the astral vibrating on a frequency which is compatible to you and so you are sure that you actually see him with your physical eyes? You can't go up and take a poke at a perfect stranger and say, "Hey, you, are you the roar? Is it something else I see?" But if you could, and if your poking finger went right through him, you would probably drop from the shock, wouldn't you? Another little thought, oh a nice little thought, this, you know all that talk about people who come out of flying saucers, or, to be more respectful, UFOs? Have you ever thought that if these people who came out of such things were so frightfully alien that we couldn't believe them, then we wouldn't see them, would we? Think that over. If a thing is too different from what humans can believe, they won't believe it, and, not believing it, they won't see it. Yet another simple little thought, these people may be of a different vibration, a vibration which is in the band of invisibility so far as humans are concerned. They can see humans, but humans can't see them. You think that sounds crazy? All right, how about this? Dogs can hear sounds which humans cannot, so are you going to say that the sounds which dogs can hear and humans cannot are not there? The dog can hear the sounds and also hear the sounds which humans hear. The dog 60. Can hear both, so why should we not have people from another world on such a different range of vibrations that humans cannot perceive them? You think about that and then see if you don't feel somebody looking over your shoulder. He has two other questions here which have already been answered in a previous book of mine. He asks, did man evolve from the sea, into apes, into man? And where do the different races come from, out of space? The gardeners of the universe? That's easy. All you have to do to get those answers is read The Hermit, the hows and whys and wherefores are given clearly in that book. 61. Chapter 4. One who could have been a friend shunted along the concrete-carpeted corridor.